Okay, everyone, please sit down. We'll continue with the session on the Grand Challenges in Soil Modeling. My name is Danny Orr, and I'll co-chair with Andrea here and Jirka. And the next speaker is Stephen Fry from Waterloo. All right.
Good morning, everybody. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about taking some processes that we usually find in small-scale models, physically-based models, finite element-based models, and we're looking now at trying to apply these processes at much larger scales to incorporate much higher levels of physical reality across watersheds instead of just plot or field scale. So a little bit of background. Typically, for looking at solute transport and very detailed water movement characteristics in macroporous or structured soils, we employ the Richards equation. And for the macroporous soils, a dual permeability version of the Richards equation usually works quite well. And this goes back to work by Gerke and Manganuthan in 1993. So the dual permeability formulations that I'm going to talk about today are based on the 1993 work essentially by Gerke and Manganuthan, at least back to the governing equations. So for solute transport in these soil profiles, the macropores, or the second continuum, if you will, is very important. So oftentimes, if you're just looking at water flow, you can use an equivalent porous medium approach to try and capture some of the hydrologic characteristics. But when you start looking at solute transport, your solution has to be much more constrained. And that's where the more elaborate physical representation with the macropores becomes very important. Also, tile drain networks. Explicitly defined or discretized tile drain networks are typically employed in these types of models at the plot or field scale. Generally, they haven't been employed yet at the watershed scale. So just an example now, if you look down at the bottom left, that's a typical soil profile that you might see discretized and employed in a dual continuum formulation. And the figures at the bottom right show a solute distribution following a manure application on a macroporous clay loam. So that's a typical application for a dual permeability model. So why do we want to consider macropore flow? This is just a little bit of a primer. So if you look at a loading function up here, the red line is a solute, the green line is irrigation or precipitation, and the bottom red line shows your breakthrough curve at the bottom of a soil profile. So if we just look at the hydraulic characteristics of the soil matrix, you might get a saturated hydraulic conductivity of 12 centimeters per day, and you feed this into your model, you get simulation that looks like the blue line, very far away from reality. Next possible option is equivalent porous medium, where you take into account the bulk characteristics of both the macropores and the soil matrix. Maybe the saturated hydraulic conductivity in this case is 70 centimeters per day. Your model does a little bit better of a job of reproducing reality, but still not very good. So now instead of torturing your equivalent porous medium model to match the field data, what you can do is a dual permeability formulation. And there we see, by considering the macropores and the soil matrix independently but within a coupled numerical solution, we get a much better match to reality. So this is a little bit of information describing why macropores are important. So the model we're using here is Hydrogeosphere. It simulates both the surface water flow and the subsurface flow. Just to briefly show here, this is the Richards equation for the saturation-dependent form, and the next equation down is the two-dimensional, or that's the diffusion wave equation. We solve it in a two-dimensional form for surface water across the land surface. These two equations are coupled implicitly in our numerical solution via a coupling term, it's a first-order term. Some other features of the model that are quite important in this case are the tile drains. We've incorporated tile time-varying root depth, a couple different evapotranspiration formulations. We have dams, winter processes, reactive transport. And especially for the application of upscaling, the code has recently been parallelized, which allows us to do bigger simulations faster. So now the objective of this work is to incorporate a very detailed level of physical reality into large-scale models. And we're going to use the model to evaluate the influence of tile drain management on watershed hydrologic characteristics. So just a little bit of background about tile drain management. What you see on the left is a free-draining tile, and then on the right is control tile. So control tile drainage is an emerging, well, I shouldn't say really it's emerging, it was kind of comes out of work that was done in the 70s, but it's an agricultural BMP that's catching on for conserving water during the growing season, and also to limit the off-field movement of nutrients. So the watershed we're going to look at for this work, it's actually an Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada experimental watershed. It was instrumented back in 2005. It's been extensively monitored, and initially there was no control tile drainage in this watershed. So the first couple years of monitoring was all the tiles in free-draining state. And then around 2007, they started putting in control structures. So if you look at the picture here, if I can pick up our mouse, so there's a control structure at the end of a tile drain line. And over the course of 2007 to 2010, 122 of these structures were put into the watershed. So essentially what happened then, the watershed went from being free draining to control draining. So now we're into what the model looks like. For this this type of modeling, we use a very accurate LiDAR topography. It was collected at a 1 meter resolution. The soils data, this is interesting, the soils data actually comes from the soil survey. So the characteristics are static. They're extracted largely from the soil survey information, but also we use Rosetta to infill some gaps for the moisture retention characteristics. We have very detailed land use and crop type information, spatially distributed. We need to know where the field boundaries are, the tile drains, and also where the tile drain control structures are. So after we've constructed the model, this is kind of what it looks like in 3D. You can see with the LiDAR topography, and note there's a strong vertical exaggeration here. It's actually picking up the plow furrows. This LiDAR was collected in the fall after a lot of the fields had been plowed. So it's 4 meters thick. And you can see we've got five discrete soil layers represented in the model. And as I mentioned, those are from the soil survey. And also, what's important here, this model domain is coupled to the regional flow system through a third type boundary condition. And so what we're trying to do here is incorporate multiple levels of physical reality to try and get the model closer to what we see in the real world without having to torture model parameters. And also there's macropores in the model that extend from the ground surface down to tile drain depth. So now we'll look a little bit at the mesh that was constructed to represent this. So this is just a plan view, sort of a top-down looking perspective on the mesh. The model domain, so the overlay and flow domain in this case is almost 5 square kilometers. We have about 62,000 surface nodes in the model. In the porous media or the subsurface, essentially the porous media here representing the soil matrix, we have about 560,000 model nodes. And the tile drains, we have 27,000 independent one-dimensional elements to represent the tile drain networks. And then the macropore domain extends from the surface down to tile depth. So we have about another 300,000 nodes for the macroporous continuum here in this model. So this is what it looks like when we're trying to see where our tiles are. And I'll commend Agriculture Canada. They did a tremendous job characterizing all these tiles. It took them forever. It was a tremendous amount of work. And so these tile drains, they're also connected to control structures that allow us to numerically determine whether or not these things are in free-draining state or whether they're controlled in order to back up the water table. So we actually have controls in the model now to determine at what level the gates are in the control structures to give us an idea of where the water table might be. So those control structures are represented by third type boundary conditions, slightly modified. So now I'll look briefly at results. And again, when I wrote this abstract back in the spring, I thought, oh, by the time the conference comes, we're going to have tons of great stuff to show. And then when I had a chance to review the abstract back in August, I thought, oh, no problem, another month or two, we're going to be like all the way there. So we're getting closer, and so this is completely uncalibrated. So this is just the model with multiple levels of physics incorporated, but we haven't tried to tune any parameters yet. And you can see for 2006, what we're looking at is the discharge. So up in the top right, you can see the discharge point in the surface water domain from the model. And we're looking at the flow over a growing season at that point. So in 2006, there was no tile drain control. We run the model with daily precipitation. And I'll make a note here with regards to daily precipitation. The next thing we're going to implement into this model is hourly precipitation. So we're continuing to add detail, add process complexity. But you can see we are capturing some of the characteristics of the hydrograph with the model in its uncalibrated state here with free draining tiles. So now we'll look at 2011, where the watershed was under tile drain control. So all of these control structures were active. We were holding water back in the field. And we can see how the model compared when the model actually took into account the control draining tiles as compared to when the tiles were free draining. So if you look at the bottom, there's our hydrograph for the different scenarios. Blue line is observed. The green line is free draining tiles, which is not the way the control structures were operating. And then the red line is the control tiles, which is actually how the control structures were operating. And we do see we match the hydrograph characteristics from a temporal perspective somewhat well. We do see that the model is emulating the influence of control drainage versus free drainage, but it's still not quite perfect. So there's still some work to do in this model. And one more thing I'll show here is the type of detail we can get out of this model. So there's 1 meter LiDAR data underlying the construction of the topography here. And what we're seeing is the depth of the water table spatially distributed across the model domain with the influence of tiles in the control draining state, which is the top animation, and the free draining state, which is in the bottom animation. So what you see on the right is the PET on a daily basis across the growing season. And then the bottom, the red bar, is the precipitation intensity on a daily basis across the model domain. And you can see during the dry season, the water table was below tile depth for both cases, so then tile drainage management had no influence. But when things get wet, you can see how the tile drain management and holding water back on the field surface is captured in the model by its representation of the higher water table. So there's an incredible level of detail that's being generated here, but there's still some work to do. So a few take-home messages. We definitely see that the physics-based modeling is showing some promise for characterizing some fairly complicated process at larger and larger scales. It's also doing a reasonable job at capturing the influence of some of the emerging agricultural BMPs, so we can test the impact of these BMPs on hydrology and hopefully nutrient transport characteristics at some point. We always have missing data. It's a challenge. Everywhere you go and you talk about large-scale modeling, people want to ask where the data comes from. Well, when you're incorporating this level of physical detail into a watershed-scale model, there's definitely some gaps and some interpolations that have to be made. And finally, we'll note that there's computational challenges when trying to run these simulations over large time frames. But with the code being parallelized, and advanced numerical methods, we can deal with these complex physical systems more and more realistically. And there's a couple of relevant references there, but really the guts of this are yet to be submitted for publication. So with that, I'll take some questions.